We inherited this job. I thought about that. Inherited is the wrong word. Co-opted. Not quite the right word either. Had it dumped on us unexpectedly. Thomas frowned thoughtfully.
I saw a news program earlier, he said. You killed a troll and proclaimed the Tri-Cities your territory.
He was looking at me. I cleared my throat. I didn't kill the troll. That was Adam and some of the pack, and technically speaking, the whole of the Tri-Cities has always been our territory. I caught something in Thomas's gaze, and I realized that he was highly amused, though it didn't show on his face except for a quirk of his eyebrow, but I was positive I was right. As you saw, I was going to have to find the news clip myself so I would know exactly what people knew about it. I made a true but unpolitic declaration on the bridge yesterday. The fallout of that is still settling. I pinched the bridge of my nose hard to distract myself from that thought. No need to panic in front of a vampire. Adam's hand touched the small of my back. So when one of the vampire's snitches called us to tell us there was a vampire visiting, I continued. Adam was letting me do a lot of the talking, and I wondered why. We contacted the Seethe. Wolf indicated that Marsilia was ceding the job of policing stray vampires to us. He didn't say you had called them, just that his minions had found a strange vampire who checked into this hotel.
We'll have to discuss that with him, murmured Adam.
Hal laughed then, showing his fangs in a manner that might have been accidental if he'd been a new vampire or someone less subtle. I noticed before that the vampire only laughed or smiled for effect, rather than because he was actually amused or happy. I was pretty sure that Happy and he were seldom in the same room at the same time. He stopped abruptly.
"What do you need to feel that you have successfully defended your territory?" he asked.
"The usual," drawled Adam. "What are you doing here and how long are you staying? Restrict your feeding to non-fatal and non-publicity-gathering ways. Be a good guest."
Thomas nodded.
"Fair enough. It's no more than I told Marsilia. I am here as escort for a friend traveling to Walla Walla. I will stand at her back while she tells the Grey Lords where they can stick their decrees."
Apparently, we weren't going to pretend that he didn't have a fae in his bedroom.
"Marsilia," Thomas Howe continued, "owes me on several fronts which made the Tri-City seem safer to rest in than Walla Walla."
He paused.
"I have no quarrel with you," said Adam.
Thomas inclined his head.
"We'll stay here all day and one more day, then return home the following evening. I have no need to hunt at this time. If that changes, I will kill no one under your protection who has not harmed me or mine."
"Thomas." The door to the bedroom opened, and a woman came out. She walked steadily with the help of a pair of crutches, the kind that wrap around the forearm instead of the ones that fit under the armpit.
"You sound like a fae driving a bargain."
She didn't sound as if she were complimenting him, even though she was fae herself. The social temperature in the room dropped to well below zero. Thomas Howe lost his humanity, a very dangerous predator, with a half-empty glass of wine in his hand. They weren't lovers, I didn't think. The body language and scent were wrong for that. The scents of lovers tend to blend rather than lie on top of each other. His fierce protectiveness told me that whatever their relationship was, he would kill to protect her, and he was ready to do so right now. Like Howe, she was dressed in silk, an opaque shift that covered her from shoulders to mid-calf. The gown was simple and might have been plain if it weren't for the color, which was white for the first few inches, then a yellow that deepened all the way down the garment to a rich, bitter orange at the hem. Also like Howe, she was barefoot. Her eyes, as they met mine, were crystal-clear gray. Her hair was very close to the fiery color of the hem of her gown. With that hair and the milk-white skin, she should have had freckles, but I saw no sign of them. Of course, she was fae. If she had freckles and didn't like them, she could have hidden them. But I suspected she just didn't have them, because she'd made no effort to disguise more egregious barriers to the out-and-out beauty that I suspected was hers by nature. She was so thin that I could see both bones in her forearms. huge red scars wrapped around her wrists and ankles, as if she'd been bound and all but ripped off her extremities trying to get free. "Introduce me, please," she said. Adam glanced from the vampire to the Fae. He took a step back. He reached out and grabbed my hand so that when he sat down on the overstuffed couch, he pulled me down as well. He settled back, letting the couch half swallow him. I sank down next to him, and he wrapped one arm around my shoulder. Even so, Thomas stared at Adam for a count of three until the Fae woman made it to his side. "Manners," she said without reproof, though she repeated, "You should introduce us, Thomas."
"Margaret Flanagan," said Thomas, pulling his gaze from Adam's with an effort, "may I make you known to Adam Hauptmann, Alpha of the Columbia Basin Pack, and his mate, Mercedes Thompson Hauptmann. Adam and Mercy, may I make known to you my friend, Margaret Flanagan."
His voice was thick as he fought for control. The Fae woman inclined her head in a motion that reminded me forcefully of Thomas's gestures.
"I have heard Thomas speak of you, Miss Hauptmann. He said you fought well. High praise from him."
She sounded cool and gracious, not to mention very Irish. Thomas smiled at Adam and me in clear warning. He was marking his territory.
"I should have stayed in the other room," she told us. But she was watching Thomas with some odd combination of affection and worry. "Doubtless Thomas will scold when you have left. He chooses to forget that though my body is still weak, my power is not. I appreciate that you gave him the courtesy of removing yourself as a threat, Mr. Hauptmann. I am in your debt."
The vampire whirled on her.
"No, you should know better than that, sunshine," he growled. "The last time you owed someone, it turned out badly."
"Did it?" she asked.
He stared at her.
"I don't think it did, Thomas."
"No debt necessary," said Adam. "Just common courtesy. And I know what it is to try to protect someone who insists on putting themselves at risk."
He didn't look at me, but he didn't need to.
"Nonetheless," she insisted, "Thomas is important to me, and he would regret your deaths."
"Why didn't you go to the reservations when all of the rest of the Fae had to?" I asked, to change the topic before Adam could respond to that.
"I am the Flanagan, Mercy," she said without arrogance, "as was my father, the dragon under the hill. They have not the authority to tell me where to go or what to do. The courts of the Fae are long gone, but my father was king, and that means power of the like many have forgotten. He saved the world, and they let him die while they sat congratulating themselves on how well the Fae were blending in with the humans in this new land. They let him die because they were afraid of him. He died very, very slowly, and there are some on the reservation here to whom I would extend that same courtesy if I am given the opportunity."
Adam and Thomas had fallen silent while she talked, her voice as pleasant as if she'd been discussing the weather. If someone had asked me at that moment who was the most dangerous person in the room, the werewolf Alpha, the powerful vampire, or the skinny and broken Fae, I wouldn't have hesitated to name her. I didn't know what her mojo was. Her talk of courts, kings, and dragons went largely over my head. But she was certain that she could take out the Grey Lords. I was willing to give her the benefit of the doubt.
"Good to know," I said.
She smoothed her skirt.
"I am the Flanagan, and that means they asked me to come. I have decided that it would be better to make some things clear in person."
Her gray eyes were chilly.
"He's in love with her," said Adam. "Poor fool."
The sun was sneaking out to greet the day as we drove home. I twisted around until I could see his face. "A blind man could see that," I said. "Why poor fool?"
"Because he hasn't made a move on her," he said. "I recognize that half-crazed desire to say mine, 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 tempered by love that would never do that without a permission that will never come."
"Yours came," I told him. He snorted. "Hey," I said, holding up the chain on my neck where my wedding ring held court next to one of his dog tags and my lamb charm.
"Nudge," he said.
I looked at the cars traveling beside us as we trekked down the interstate. Here? Seriously?
Permission that will never come, he said.
That's not funny, I said. He took my hand and gently tugged it away from my necklace and kissed it.
Yes, it is. He winked at me. But yes, it only seemed like forever before you gave in. It left me with sympathy for other guys in that situation.
I thought about how the Fae woman had put herself in our debt, something not lightly done by any Fae, because Adam had backed down and allowed Thomas space. She's not uninterested, I said, settling back in my seat. Did you parse what she said about her place in the power structure of the Fae? It didn't sound like the Elfame court of the Fairy Queen. I'd met a Fairy Queen, a Fae with the rare ability to make anyone with less power than she had into a follower, a form of magical slavery. Adam shook his head.
No, it's a real court system. I've only heard a little of the Fae courts. They were gone before the Fae traveled to this continent. Nothing to impress the Grey Lords, except that it is a measure of the power her father and, evidently, she holds. They wouldn't be asking her to join them. They'd be issuing orders if they weren't convinced of her power.
Like Ariana, I said.
For different reasons, Adam agreed. Ariana made herself unwelcome because of what she held. No Grey Lord is going to want to be around something that can siphon his magic away, or any Fae who could have created it. Thomas's Fae is powerful.
Did you smell what I did? Fire, I agreed. Like Aiden, only more so. We're sure knee-deep in fiery things right now.
You think it's more than coincidence? Asked Adam.
It is a mark of how much he loved me that his voice was merely bland, not cutting. Adam believed in God all right, and they were not best buddies. I said. Karma or coincidence or something, maybe. Doesn't really matter. We pulled into the driveway, and I examined the silver Accord parked in Adam's usual spot, and managed not to growl. What was Adam's ex-wife doing here this early? In 2 more weeks she was supposedly moving back to Oregon, where she had a new condo and her old job waiting for her. I would celebrate when she actually left, and not a moment before then. I hopped out of the SUV and noticed that a lot of the cars and trucks that had been parked here when Adam and I left were gone. It took me a moment to remember that this morning was a Monday. Adam would work from home, as he often did, but most of our pack had more mundane employment that involved schedules. Before my shop was trashed, I'd had a place to be and a reason to remember what day of the week it was, too. Adam paused by Christie's car. He looked tired. "Why don't you get started arranging guards for Howe?" I said. "I'll go see why Christie came over today." We discovered that if he wasn't standing there, Christie and I could come to a meeting of minds. There would be snark and snarling, but in the end we could deal with each other. Mostly, I suspected, because without Adam's presence to remind her that I'd won the prize she'd tossed away, she remembered to be afraid of what I might do if she made my life too unpleasant. It was a pretty good return for a box of blue dye, if I did say so myself.
"She's not your problem," he said.
She couldn't hurt me, but she could hurt Adam. She'd had years of practice to develop her aim. "It's no trouble," I said. He smiled.
"That's a lie."
"It is my privilege," I said carefully, trying not to tweak his pride, "to do those things that are easier for me than for you. You do the same for me. Let me deal with her." That was the truth. Adam hesitated. It was in his nature to protect the people around him. I'd been working on him to let me do the same for him. "If she's here for you, there's nothing I can do," I told him. "But if she's just here for Jesse, keeping you out of the picture might keep the nastiness quotient down a fair bit, and that will make things easier for Jesse." He leaned forward and kissed me.
"You know the magic words," he said.
I bounced on my heels and grinned. Adam headed for his office as soon as we came in, and I headed for the kitchen, where I could smell breakfast. I'd gotten a few steps farther when I realized that it wasn't just bacon I could smell cooking. Then I noticed that there was a funny sort of silence in the air. There were 4 people in my kitchen. Jessie was plastered against the counter with the same someone's-gonna-die-today look I'd seen on her father's face a time or two. Adam's ex-wife Christy stood in front of Jessie with a damp dishcloth in her hand. Aiden was pressed tightly against the refrigerator, with his feet about a foot off the floor, because one of Daryl's very large hands was wrapped around his throat. Daryl's hand was smoking, and his eyes were glowing bright yellow. "Alrighty." "Drop the munchkin, Daryl," I said in as relaxed a voice as I could find. There were too many fragile humans in here to allow this to break out into a real fight. "We promise not to let him get killed for 24 hours, right?" Daryl took a step back, but his hand was still wrapped around Aiden's throat. Then Daryl shook his hand, Aiden dropped to his feet, lost his balance, and fell on his rump, a feral snarl on his face as he scrambled out of the vulnerable position. "If you do what you're thinking about doing, Aiden," I said, "I'll let Daryl loose." "Then he'll die," said Aiden, who'd managed to find his feet and stood in an angry crouch. "Mm-hmm," I said. I wasn't sure Aiden wasn't right, but it's never good to show fear in front of your enemies. I really, really wished I had some idea of just how powerful Aiden was. There was a cardboard box of donuts on the counter. Ah, spud nuts. Probably Christy had brought them, but I took one out to eat anyway, as it was unlikely she'd poison them. She wouldn't have known which one I'd eat. I like most donuts, especially spud nut donuts, but the glazed one I ended up with, covered with pink sprinkles, was not one of my favorites. But the point of eating was to give everyone time and reason to cool off. "You kill Daryl, and I don't think you're going to walk out of here alive," I said conversationally around a bite of glazed with sprinkles donut. I ignored Daryl's indignant grunt when I agreed that Aiden might actually accomplish his death. "I've faced creatures that would kill every living thing in this house without an effort, and I'm still alive," he said grimly. "Try me." "Good donuts, Christy," I said. Jessie put her finger to her lips when her mother would have said something. I licked my fingers, a waste of time until I finished the donut. "Look, Aiden, you are counting on our being enough that the Grey Lords back off, right? If the Grey Lords are afraid of us, don't you think you should at least consider being afraid enough to back down from outright aggression into a position where negotiation can take place? If you aren't worried about us, I might point out that the Dark Smith of Drontheim is upstairs." The tile under Aiden's feet cracked with a loud pop, but he stood up from his defensive crouch. The tiles surrounding the cracked tile were discolored by the heat he was generating. It was ceramic tile. I wasn't sure how much heat was required to crack ceramic tile, though I rather suspected that it was less heat than was needed to burn a house to the ground. We all stared at it a moment, even Aiden.
"My floor!" gasped Christy.
Yes, she had picked out the tiles in the kitchen, hadn't she? I regarded Aiden with a little more favor than I'd felt before. "Information first," I said. "Does anyone want to tell me what happened?"
"I was watching the bacon," Jessie said coolly, "and the next thing I know, the little creep was grabbing my butt."
I trust I caught my instinctive clench of teeth before anyone saw it. No one touches my daughter without her permission. Since Daryl had already made that clear, there was no need for me to come unhinged. Adam, whom I could sense listening from his office, he must have left his door open, apparently felt the same way, because Aiden was still breathing and Adam wasn't in the kitchen. Yet. I started a countdown in my head.
"They were treating me like a child," Aiden said.
"What does that have to do with anything?" I asked. He looked at me as if I were an idiot.
"Children are victims. I am neither child nor victim, despite what I look like. It was necessary that I do something to remind everyone that I might be in a child's form, yet I own more years than anyone here."
I blinked at him, so totally nonplussed that I was robbed of anger. That was an excuse I'd never heard before.
"So," Jessie said in the same cool voice, evidently not as distractible as I was, "not regarding him as a child, I smacked his face with a spatula."
That was my Jessie. She'd hit him hard, too, because now that the flush of color he'd acquired while Daryl was strangling him had faded, I could see the rectangular red mark on his face.
Mama just came in with donuts and we were talking, or I'd have seen him sneaking up on me.
She paused her story to answer the question on my face.
I don't know why she's here, Mercy. She hasn't had a chance to say. She yelled at him, and that brought Daryl.
Succinct, I thought. A little out of order, but with all the essential information.
Grab my daughter's butt again and you draw back a stump, growled Adam as he strode into the room 2 seconds after I expected him.
He thanked Daryl with a nod, but never took his eyes off the Fae.
And I don't care what you were trying to prove.
She's your daughter?
The anger drained away from Aiden, leaving him looking like we just pulled the rug out from under him.
She was making food, he said, and I saw her carrying food and drink yesterday. I thought her but a servant.
He looked around, and indignation replaced his look of helpless confusion.
She called that woman mother, and I knew you were mated to this woman, he gestured toward me. How was I to know that you had two wives?
Whiny, yes, I thought, wrong on many fronts, but also truthful. He was upset, not because he'd grabbed Jesse's rump without permission, but because it had been Adam's daughter's rump. Not a stellar individual, I thought, finishing off the donut, but look how he was raised. Feral didn't begin to describe the likely result of being human and raised by Underhill, the fairies, but he might still be salvageable. I took the damp cloth from Christie's hand and wiped my fingers with it. Salvageable by someone else. He was only going to be with us for another 6 hours or so. Daryl flexed his hand and bits of burnt flesh dropped to the floor, leaving his skin raw-looking but no longer charred.
Little man, he growled, you don't touch unless you are invited. Not in this house. And if you are a gentleman, not ever. Servant, slave, or lady of the house.
I've broken my word, Aiden said, gathering his dignity around himself. I'll leave.
I almost let him go, but Z had asked me, in the only way Z would ask such a thing. I owed Z.
I knew I missed something, I said. I should have put in a clause about protecting yourself, right? Grandstanding is a very bad way to make bargains. It's too easy to leave things out, but I can do that now. Let's see.
I cleared my throat. I declare that you can use the minimum force necessary to protect yourself until misunderstandings are cleared up, as long as you apologize right now and don't do it again. Daryl gave me a look. Adam did, too. It was probably a very good thing that Aiden looked like a 10-year-old.
Are you hurt, Daryl? I asked.
He rubbed his hands together.
Not anymore,
he said. Daryl's job is to make sure people are safe, I said. Did you disobey him?
Aiden screwed up his face.
You are very strange, he said. I insulted your stepdaughter, yes. Then I hurt the man who stood up for her honor.
Jesse made a growling noise.
I stood up for myself, you little perv.
Aiden looked at her. She glared back.
Okay, then, I said. Aiden, it is good manners to apologize when you offend someone. In your case, it means that you can continue to enjoy the protection of the pack for a few more hours.
He turned to Adam and said sincerely,
Please accept my apologies for importuning your daughter.
He turned to Jesse's mother.
I am also sorry that I distressed you in any manner.
He bowed to Daryl.
I sincerely apologize for burning you. You weren't hurting me, just scaring me. There was no cause.
Jesse cleared her throat. He looked at her, and they eyed each other with mutual loathing. His lip curled.
I am very sorry you don't appreciate the honor I did you, he said. I won't make that mistake again.
He was lucky she didn't hit him a second time, I thought.
I'm very sorry, Jesse said sincerely, that I didn't have a kitchen knife in my hand instead of a spatula. Next time, maybe I'll be more careful.
Jesse, I said, your eggs are burning. I looked at Adam.
You take Aiden and I'll take Christie, I mouthed.
I'd like to speak to Adam, Christie said,
her tone making it clear she'd seen me. No help for it once she asked. I shrugged. Aiden, step outside with me.
Daryl smiled. I'll go check the perimeter. It'll let me keep an eye on you.
You could stay with Jessie, I said, because I didn't trust that smile. It was a little too eager. Help her with breakfast or something. I can cook eggs, said Jessie, scraping the blackened remnants into the garbage disposal. Assuming I don't have to teach some ancient punk kid how to keep his hands to himself. Yuck. She left it to her audience to decide where that last word was directed. Aiden turned back and narrowed his eyes at her. Aiden, I said. He stiffened, but followed me out to the backyard where he stood, his arms wrapped around himself in hostile rejection, or possibly fear. Daryl trailed after us, then broke into a jog and headed for the river side of the property. What happened in there was all about power, I said thoughtfully after Daryl was a sufficient distance away. Aiden didn't say anything. I thought about power. About how Adam had sat in the soft hotel sofa to make Thomas Howe feel more at ease. So I sat down on the grass. The seat of my pants was immediately wet and cold. Evidently the lawn had just been watered. At least my slacks wouldn't show the water stain the way my usual jeans would have. Aiden looked at me, frowned, then took a seat on the nearest lawn chair. You felt it was dangerous for us to consider you a child, I said. Because in your world, children are vulnerable, and the Fae like to prey upon them. I pushed my fingers into the soil. Werewolves are not Fae. For the pack, children are fragile, and the wolves, most of them anyway, see them as a charge, someone to be protected from all harm. I would be safer here pretending to be the age that my body appears, he asked warily. I sighed and shook my head. For all that we both spoke English, we were alien, weren't we? No, I said. Pretending is a lie, and wolves can tell if you lie. But you didn't have to make a big deal of your real age in order to be safe. But I was talking about power, not specifically about you. I looked up at the sky and thought about how to explain 21st century manners and morals to someone who had last been human before Europeans had set foot on this continent. Touch, I said, is basic to the human condition. Mothers touch their babies to bond with them. Touch brings comfort or pain. Touch is important. The most powerful person in a room is the one who can touch anyone else, and no one can touch him back without permission. The Romans would have substituted sex for touch, but I thought I didn't have to go that crude. Sometimes when dealing with very old creatures, my history degree was unexpectedly useful. Lady, Aiden said sincerely, you are strange. You are saying that I am less powerful than the girl. He held out his hand and showed me the fire he held. I do not think so. Think about what happened in there, I said. Who ended up winning that encounter? She hit me, he said. But I could have killed her, or hurt her so she never would have tried to hit me again. But Daryl stopped you, I told him, because he is more powerful, and his job is to take care of Jessie, to make sure no one touches her without permission. I could have killed him, too, said Aiden. I shrugged. Yes, but he has those who protect him, too, and you are not stronger than Z, the Dark Smith. Silence. I nodded. So what is power for, Aiden? To be safe, Aiden said without hesitation. A sociology professor of mine had asked that in my college class. She got answers ranging from wealth to the ability to do whatever you wanted to whomever you wanted. She said that when she'd asked that question in a village in a South American country that was on its fifth dictator in 10 years, she'd gotten only one answer. Safety. Okay, I said, wondering what it said about Underhill that Aiden had that much in common with people who'd lived with uncertainty and terror for generations. So what did you do when you touched Jessie without permission? There was a long pause. I made her feel unsafe, he said. I shook my head. Not really. She had no trouble defending herself, and she knew there was a house full of people who would make sure she was safe. What you did do was tell her that you had no intention of letting her be safe with you. He said nothing. You are safe with us, I told him. We will not touch you nor allow anyone else to touch you while you are under our protection. The big man with the dark brown skin touched me, he said. Daryl. I nodded. You're right. So, unless you threaten one of our own, we will not allow you to be touched without your permission. We have the power to do that, and we extend that power to you, to our pack, and to Jesse. Power comes from three places, Aiden. It comes from the power that you have as an individual. Some people have a lot of that. Z has a lot of power just from being himself. Someone can leverage the power they have to take more power. But power taken by force only lasts as long as you can hold it. Most dictators don't live long lives. He said, sounding offended, The third way to gain power is to have others give you their power. I am not a child, nor am I stupid. I nodded, though I thought the jury was out on the last. I'm pretty weak as far as creatures of magic are concerned. I have a few tricks, but I was able to grant you sanctuary from the Grey Lords because I have friends, I have pack, and I have people who love me. I turned my head, met his eyes, and frowned at him. You are going to need a lot of power to stay safe from the Grey Lords. Right at this moment, that means you need to work at making people want to help you instead of wanting to strangle you and shove your head through a refrigerator. He threw up his hands and cried out with honest frustration, But how do I do that? I don't understand you people. I don't know your customs. I don't know anything about this place. Okay, I told him. Sometimes you have to start just knowing you don't know anything. But if you assume that you are on the bottom of the pack, that means no touching anyone without invitation. You will be safe, because I have promised you that, and I have the power to make that stick. But I cannot protect you from your own bad decisions. If you go around grabbing women's butts, they might hit you with something a little sharper next time. Aiden stared at me. You are very strange. I have no intention of coming anywhere near the Alpha's daughter again. That's probably safer for you, I agreed. Jesse opened the back door. Mercy, she said. Dad's still in his office with Mom, and we have a visitor who wants to see you or Dad. The subtle emphasis meant that Jesse knew who it was, but didn't think she should mention it in front of Aiden. That meant Faye. I stood up and dusted off the back of my pants, which were wet. Okay, I said. In the interest of keeping our word, Aiden, you should come inside. Why? He sneered. There are two werewolves watching the backyard. Aren't three enough to give alarm? Or do you acknowledge that the Fae can come into your territory and take me? Warren and Ben weren't being obvious. I could smell them, but I couldn't see them. Daryl had disappeared while I wasn't watching. If we keep the weakest of us, that's me, and the one most likely to be attacked, that's you, in the same place, we keep our defense stronger than if we scatter them between us. And there is a Fae here to see us. I realized I hadn't told him that because he looked like he was a child. I was going to have to get over that instinct. Whoever our visitor is, he's Fae, or Jesse would have said something more. You need to come inside. I glanced at Jesse. Uncle Mike, she said. I told him to wait in the living room. Is he here for me? Asked Aiden. I shook my head. I don't know. I suppose we'll have to find out. 7. I sent Aiden to wait in the kitchen, and Jesse headed upstairs to get ready for school. I didn't think that Uncle Mike had come here to take Aiden by force, but decided that keeping him discreetly in the heart of the house would be prudent. Uncle Mike was not a friend. The only Fae I trusted enough to consider a friend was Z, but Uncle Mike was someone I knew and mostly liked. He'd run an eponymous bar in Pasco where, in days before their sudden retreat, the Fae had hung out with various members of the local supernatural community. That Jesse had opened the door to him and left Uncle Mike in the living room
was a testament to the neutrality that Uncle Mike had built while running his bar. Jessie trusted him more than I did. I'd have been happier if she'd left him on the front porch rather than letting him in herself, but no apparent harm had come from it. As I crossed the foyer, I could hear the low murmur of voices coming from Adam's office, but with the door shut, the soundproofing was too good to hear anything specific. Uncle Mike stood, arms clasped behind his back, looking out the windows. He was so intent that I looked out too, but I could see nothing that should have inspired such interest. After a moment he turned and said, "Mercy." Uncle Mike looked like a worn and distilled version of himself. The jolly innkeeper persona was almost gone, leaving in his place a broad-shouldered, broad-handed man with reddish-brown hair and tired hazel eyes. "Uncle Mike," I greeted him, "it has been a while. I'm surprised to see you here." His lips curled into a shadow of his usual smile.
"Not as surprised and four times as pleased as my compatriots, I vow."
"You've been reading The Lord of the Rings again," I said, and he grunted. "So the people ruling the reservation these days don't know you're here and would be upset to know it," I said. "Why are you here?"
"Not to interfere with your rash protection of the fire touched," he said in an overly loud voice, obviously intended to reach the far ends of the house and Aiden's ears. Then in a much softer voice he said, "One of my flifflets told me that she'd heard that the dark smith and his boy were on the bridge with you yesterday. I discounted it until I heard that the fire touched escaped and that he was under the protection of the pack. My news sources aren't as reliable as they once were, but it was not hard to connect both stories."
He flexed his short fingers and put them down on his knees, leaned forward and said, "Several weeks ago I was told that the dark smith had been executed for failure to cooperate sufficiently, and also that his son died soon after, half-bloods being so much more fragile than we." "The Fae cannot lie," I told him, wondering what a flit-flit was. I puzzled over it too long and missed my cue, though. He'd relaxed as soon as I'd spoken, and I realized I'd pretty much given away Z's still-alive status by not freaking out when Uncle Mike said he'd heard that he was dead.
"Yes, we cannot lie," he said, "and after I heard the stories, I thought on what was told and by whom. I think that the one who told me believed what she said, and the one who told her was cunning with his words, as his reputation leaves him to be."
"Z's alive," I told him, "and what's a flit-flit?" And even though he had known that from my reaction, he still drew in a deep breath as if he hadn't had many deep breaths in a long time.
"And so it is true."
"And if it is?" asked Z from the stairway, his voice arctic.
Uncle Mike smiled. This time it was the full-force, hugely charismatic smile that made the part of me that detected magic sit up and take notice.
"Well, then," he said, satisfaction lacing his voice, "some people are going to be looking over their shoulders now, aren't they?"
Z tipped his head to the side.
"That is an interesting notion. I'm not sure I know what you are talking about."
"Don't you now," said Uncle Mike in evident satisfaction. "Just don't you, old friend."
"What," I asked again, "is a flit-flit?"
"Less a fae," Z said. "They flit-flit around and hear things. Uncle Mike has a number of them who are personally loyal to him."
The other fae nodded.
"What do you want me to do about what I know?"
Z frowned.
"You see me standing before you. I trust you aren't in the mood to change my status."
"Someone wanted us to think you dead," Uncle Mike said. "Do you want me to disabuse them of that notion, or let it play out?"
Z gave him a sour smile.
"What do I care? I don't play those games. I don't play any games."
The smile that spread over Uncle Mike's face was shark-like and sharp.
"Someone forgot that. Forgot whom they were dealing with."
"Good."
He breathed out deeply and said,
"Very good."
He walked to the door and opened it, pausing on the threshold and turning back.
"I am reassured as to your health, old friend. I look forward to being in the audience for your next act."
He bowed his head to Z, then to me before stepping outside and closing the door very gently behind him. Z watched him leave, listened to the car as it drove off, and came the rest of the way down the stairs. He did it without limping or making noise or any other thing, but he did it very slowly. He was badly hurt. When he got to the bottom, I said, "Breakfast in the kitchen, I think. If Jesse didn't leave extra eggs, then there would still be leftover donuts." As if the mention of her name summoned her, Jesse descended the stairs in a tenth of the time it had taken Z.
"I used up the eggs," she said, "but I can reheat the French toast I put in the fridge if anyone wants some."
"That would be good," Z said.
Jesse ignored Aiden entirely and began rummaging in the fridge. Z, who was very good at reading between the lines when he cared to, gave Aiden a speculative and not altogether friendly look. Warren came in from outside, still tucking his shirt into his jeans. There was something in his face that told me his wolf was lingering close to the surface, but his smile was real when he offered to give Jesse a ride to school. Jesse brought a plate of French toast over and set it in front of Z.
"A ride?"
She heaved a big sigh and rolled her eyes to demonstrate that she wasn't fooled. Warren would be sticking around the school to make sure she was safe. Warren frowned at Jesse, hunching his lanky length as if he'd absorbed a blow.
"If you'd rather ride with someone else, that's all right, Jesse. Darryl would take you."
The excessive Texas was to let Jesse know that he really wasn't hurt.
"Or Ben," he said innocently.
Ben had caused quite a stir when he'd gone to her school. Subtle, the foul-mouthed Englishman was not. Warren would be a lot less likely to attract notice. She rolled her eyes again because she knew what he was doing, but she couldn't help but pat his shoulder and laugh, too.
"Oh, let's not bother Ben. It's fine. We should go before I'm late."
Warren kissed my cheek, and I gave him a hug. "Thanks," I said.
"No worries," he said. "Boss asked me last night if I'd take her and set up watch. Work's been quiet lately. Kyle's starting to complain about the number of polite divorces he's been handling. Says if they're that civil, they probably should stay married."
Warren's partner Kyle was a divorce lawyer, and Warren was a private eye who did odd jobs for Kyle's firm. "Quiet is good," I said.
"That's what I told him," Warren said. "I don't think he's convinced."
He gave the room a general wave. Then, with a hand on her shoulder, escorted Jesse out of the house. "So," I said, sitting down at the table with Z and Aiden as soon as Warren and Jesse left, "we should talk about options for Aiden." Aiden looked away from me to the floor of the kitchen where the cracked tile bore witness to his first clash with the pack.
"It might be interesting," Z said, "to determine whether the troll had been sent after me, after Tad, or after Aiden. If it was after Aiden, you might have more trouble with the Fae."
He meant that if the troll had been sent after him or Tad, he would handle the fallout. I had all the faith in the world that Z could protect himself, when he was healthy enough to walk down the stairs with something approaching his normal grace. Not that it mattered. If the Fae operated anything like the wolves as far as power games went, it was the pack they'd have to go after first, or they'd lose face. Bran had seemed to think we could negotiate with them. I just hoped he was right. "I think we might be looking at trouble either way," I said. "But let's talk about Aiden, because he has a time limit. How hard are they going to look for you, Aiden? Would it be enough to relocate you somewhere far from the Fae reservations, or are they likely to send people after you wherever you go?"
"I don't know," he said finally. "It seemed to me that they were most interested in how I use Fae magic when I shouldn't be able to touch it because humans can't."
He put both hands flat on the table. The nails were bitten to the quick.
"They used to take Underhill for granted. She was their home, their Jew, and their servant. Then she shooed them all out the door and locked it up tight against them."
He shivered.
"There were other things in Underhill," he said, not looking at any of us. "Not just us human-born changelings. There were places where the Fae kept their prisoners. I suppose some of them were normal as any Fae, when they were first locked up. But when she opened the prison doors, because she was lonely, she said, there was nothing remotely normal about what came out.
When they killed us by the dozens, she was sad, so she gave us power to protect ourselves. She gave me the gift of fire. As far as I can tell, the Fae are mostly jealous. They've killed enough of us that they are convinced they can't take the fire from me and keep it themselves, though.
Z pursed his lips and whistled. Did you tell any of them that she'd opened up the prisons?
Aiden shook his head. But they know, right? She's opened the doors, so they've seen.
I think not, Z said. I think she's been playing games with them.
He sat back, grunted, and sat straighter.
Mercy, I think it is safe to assume they will come after him. He is beloved of Underhill.
Aiden snorted, trying to sound nonchalant, I thought, but mostly he sounded scared. Z gave Aiden a sour smile.
Last night while I slept, she whispered in my dreams. Where is my beloved? She asked. What have you done with him, Smith? Bring him back to me. If she is talking to other Fae, they will hunt you until you are dead, or they can give you back to her.
Aiden's eyes showed white all around.
Don't take me back there, he begged Z. Please don't.
Underhill addressed you? I asked Z. Unlike Aiden, I knew that Z wouldn't even walk across the street at the bidding of the Fae, not after they put Tad in jeopardy. And what was Underhill but another form of Fae? Aiden was in no danger of Z's returning him anywhere. Z nodded.
I don't like it either, he said. I never had much to do with Underhill, though I've attended a court or two there. Underhill, like most of the Fae, is sensitive to metal, and iron-kissed is my nature. We don't get on.
Z tapped on the table.
It disturbs me that Underhill knows my name.
Me too, said Aiden, thoroughly spooked. Your name, my name. I wish he'd forget them all.
He glanced over at me.
Would you keep me safe for one more day, so I can think on this? I will do what I can to stay out of your way.
What do you expect to accomplish with another day? Asked Z.
I cannot promise anything yet, I answered Aiden. I have to talk to Adam. Before he could remind me that I'd given him sanctuary in the first place without talking to Adam, a door opened and Christy burst into the kitchen. Tears slid down her pretty face and she furiously wiped them away. She met my eyes, raised her chin, and said, "He is a bastard!" Adam stalked in after her, temper in every muscle of his body.
"Where's Daryl?"
he asked the room in general.
"Outside," Z told him. "Perimeter duty."
He must have been listening to what had gone on in the kitchen before he came down. Adam opened the back door and said,
"Daryl, I have a job for you."
Christy crossed her arms under her chest and glared at me.
"This is your fault," she said.
She uncrossed her arms and wiped her eyes again with special attention to not smearing her mascara. I made a neutral sound. Adam gave a look to Christy, who bit her lip and turned her head away.
"No," he said, "it isn't. Daryl?"
The big man slid into the kitchen.
"Yes?" "I need you to take Christy to her apartment and let her pack. Tomorrow at 6 a.m. she's getting on a plane. You'll be on it with her. She'll change airplanes in Seattle for a flight to the Bahamas. You have the choice of waiting 4 hours for your return flight, which is paid for, or renting a car at the pack's expense and driving home."
"What's up?" I asked.
"There was a note pinned to her door this morning," Adam said.
He reached into his back pocket and withdrew an envelope that he'd folded in half. It was thick paper, the kind that comes with invitations to weddings or graduations. I took out the card inside. It was inscribed by hand by someone with incredibly good penmanship. It read, "Dear Christina Hauptmann, please give the attached message to your husband." I grimaced at the "your husband" part. Christy had thrown Adam away, and she didn't get him back. I raised the card to my nose. It smelled of Adam, Christy, and very faintly of the ocean and something. "The Fadil," I said. The Fadil had attacked me once. I'd run to the pack, and they had driven him off. Cantrip would have classified him as a boogie monster, a creature used to frighten children into being good or staying safe in their beds. That was one way to look at it.
I looked upon him and his ilk as a fey analog of the human pedophile, but the fey version usually ate its prey. Adam nodded.
I smelled him too.
There's another note? I asked, putting the first on the table so that everyone could look. Adam pulled it out of his front pocket and gave it to me. Like the first, it carried the Fidel's scent. I pulled the card out. The Fae hadn't bothered with a polite address here, though the fancy paper and the elegant writing were the same. Adam Hauptmann, your coyote said that you intend to protect your territory. We can make that promise cost you dearly even unto your last breath. We can bring war and destruction to your territory until not one stone stands upon another, until there is no soul left to cry over your dead. But we are willing to bargain. You have something we want. Call this number if you are interested in what we have to say. Like the other note, this one was unsigned. I frowned. They don't say what we have. Do they mean Z, Aiden, or Tad, or maybe something entirely different, like the walking stick?
Yes, said Z, or maybe no. They may want you to tell them what you have, or they may not be in agreement. He sighed. Getting all the Fae to point in the same direction is like herding cats, and once you accomplish that, they are still more likely to stab the person next to them instead of the enemy they face. This might not even be from someone who can bargain for the Fae as a whole. It seems more secretive than the Grey Lords usually manage.
Daryl looked at Adam.
I'll tell work I'm on vacation for the week.
I want to stay here, Christie said. I only have 2 weeks to pack before moving to Oregon. I can't afford to spend a week in the Bahamas.
Here is dangerous for you, Daryl said, tucking his hand gently under Christie's elbow. They've already picked you out as a target. You need to be out of town, somewhere you aren't going to be easy to get to. Aurelie and I will help you pack when you get back.
Adam and the pack can keep me safe if I move back in here, she said. In the Bahamas, I'll be all by myself.
Adam is going to be hard put to keep himself alive, I told her, though she was an idiot if she didn't know it. The whole of the Fae host on the reservation is about to drop on our heads. That's what this note is all about, and we are out of room in this house.
She looked at Adam. Why are they after you?
What had they been talking about that she didn't know that, I wondered. Then I saw the temper in Adam's face and realized that she knew good and well it was my fault. She just wanted everyone to hear it again.
Because, Z said grimly, before I could admit my guilt to the world again, they have friends who are fey, and they are dangerous friends to have. If I were younger, I might apologize.
In this case, Daryl said, it is smart for you to go and have a free vacation in an island paradise that Adam is paying for.
He tugged her out of the room and talked her out of the house.
Are you both married to him? Asked Aiden, looking, of all people, at me. Or are you a paramour? And why did they call you Adam's coyote? Is a coyote not a small wolf who lives in this area?
I said, more like a large fox than a small wolf. I'm a shape-changer, but not a werewolf. My other form is a coyote.
Christy and Adam were married, said Z, but they did not suit. Human law allows for dissolution of marriage vows.
He glanced at me.
The Fae have a rather more direct method of dealing with unwanted spouses.
Returning his attention to Aiden, he said,
marriage is not as necessary for the survival of this species as it used to be. And it has suffered somewhat from the change. After the marriage was dissolved, Adam married Mercy.
There was a small pause.
I was at the wedding.
That last sounded a little bemused.
Who told you about coyotes, but didn't tell you what they were, Aiden? Asked Adam.
What? Aiden looked up. Oh, coyotes. Someone, I don't know who, because I was too busy dry-heaving to see which one, inflicted a translation spell on me. They needed to talk to me, and I refused to understand any of them, no matter what language they used.
Z said,
language is more than just words. It contains concepts and ideology unique to the people who speak it. The best of those recognize that and attempt to fill in.
With mixed results, usually.
Tad came into the room. He looked tired behind his usual cheery smile that mostly had ceased to be real sometime while he was away at college. He looked at me.
"Ask Dad about the one he used when courting my mother."
"Or not," said Z coolly.
There was a little more real warmth in the grin Tad aimed at his father. "Aiden asked for sanctuary for one more day," I told Adam. He looked at the boy, who glanced up, then away from my mate. "It isn't just posturing, the werewolf alpha thing. It might not be safe to meet an alpha's eyes because they see it as defiance, but it is also difficult. Even humans have instincts, evidently even humans who spent most of their very long life trapped in Underhill."
"Why?"
Aiden drew himself up and plastered on a vaguely patronizing smile that made me want to slap him.
"Never mind."
"He'd like to be safe for a day more," Tad said.
He was getting a coffee cup out of the cupboard, so his back was toward us. Aiden stiffened. Tad filled his cup with coffee and turned to face Aiden.
"I slept in front of your door," he said softly.
I thought the boy who wasn't couldn't hold himself any stiffer. But he did. If he were a glass, he would have shattered.
"Safe," said Tad heavily, "isn't something that Underhill is full of anymore, I think. How long were you there?"
Aiden shook his head.
"It doesn't matter."
"Underhill was mostly closed down by the 9th century, said Z conversationally. "There were a few bolt holes until the 15th century.
"What would you do for one more night of safety?" Tad asked softly.
And Aiden broke. Completely. And he did it without moving or saying anything. Tears welled and slid down his face while he breathed as if it hurt. Children don't cry that way. Silently, without expression. His face was a stony blank, and only the tears betrayed him. It was the first time I'd seen him look his age. Adam moved first. He approached him and put a hand on the top of the boy's head. When no objection followed, he drew him against his chest and let him rest in the shelter of Adam's arms. It had nothing to do with Aiden's childlike appearance. I'd seen Adam do the same for any of his wolves who was in distress. That's the base component of what an alpha does for his pack. He provides a safe place to be. Touch is better than any word. The boy's feet drew up, and he curled into a fetal ball, still crying soundlessly. Babies make noise when they cry, trusting that an adult will hear them and make things better. As children, we learn that tears have power to move the people who care for us. We make noise when we cry in a bid for attention, for help, for support. Aiden was silent and tried silently to disappear into the safety of Adam. My husband looked at me with troubled eyes. I said, "Look what followed me home. Can we keep him?" Adam's eyes warmed, and he smiled.
"I think we have to, don't you? Until we can find a better home."
Tad raised his coffee cup to Adam, and his father grunted sourly. "Aiden," I said. Adam shook his head.
"Not now. He isn't even hearing us right now."
He picked Aiden up, as if he were the child he looked to be. He started to sit on the kitchen chair, but Hoel had fallen asleep against it last week, leaving a leg half burned through. Seeing what he was looking at, Tad retrieved a chair from the dining room table. Adam sat in that and held the boy as if it were something that he was used to doing. I grabbed a dining room chair, too, and sat opposite Adam, next to Z.
"So the Fae who wrote the note could want the walking stick, Z, or Aiden," Adam said. "Or some combination thereof."
"Or Tad," said Z.
"Right," Tad said, sounding exhausted. "Let's not forget about me."
He took the chair that Adam had rejected, spun it around, and sat between Z and me.
Z said, "That note is not signed. It is probably not a coordinated effort of the Grey Lords."
"So we don't have to worry?" I asked.
"I didn't say that," said the old Fae. "If they say they can destroy this city, these cities, then they can. But even if you bargain with them, you still might not be safe."
"Always look on the bright side of life," I quoted, though I didn't try singing it. My British accent is terrible enough without music.
Okay, we do have some options, even if they suck. First, we can call the number. They can't zap us through the ether, right?
Z raised an eyebrow, so I continued blithely. And if they can, they don't need a cell phone connection to do it. Second, we can ignore them. Maybe we could send a message.